Okay, Base FCE mobile and monitoring.
Good morning from WHGCL.
Good morning, WG8W.
Was that GAW or something like that? I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch it all. Name here is Greg, Golf Romeo Echo Golf, and the call sign is Whiskey 8 Golf Charlie Lima. Good morning.
WG. 8W, we got 8 wheels. That's my funny phonetics. I used to drive semi. That was 18 wheels though. But now, the name is Rod here. I'm in Indian River.
Yeah, I'm not sure where Indian River's at, but yeah, I'm over here in Glenny, Michigan. About 6.5 miles south of the actual town of Glenny. Kind of halfway between Glenny and the 5-channel Dam, if you're familiar with the area.
Well, Indian River, if you put your left hand down on a table, palm down, and look at your middle finger at the bottom of your fingernail, that's my position in the state here, 30 miles from the Mackinac Bridge.
Wow, that's quite north of me. Where's this repeater located at?
You're on, but I'm on the 174, which is in Sheboygan, Michigan.
Oh, I'm on the 146, 700, I think. Yeah.
Is that somewhere over by Mayo or something?
You know what, I bet it is in Mayo, yeah.
In proportion to mile.
Well, I would be on the eastern side of the state for mile, southeast of mile. I'm going to say driving time, it would probably take about 2 hours for me to drive there to mile. Maybe an hour and a half. Been a while since I've been over that way.
Yeah, on the map there, you're not too far from Harrisville, so Oscoda. Yeah, you're in there from Oscoda. Okay, I haven't been over that way in a long time.
Well, miles quite a ways from me, so my antenna's not very high up in the air at this present time. I'm going to try to make changes with that this summer. Anyway, I hope I'm holding the repeater okay. I'm running all the power I got over here from the radio. It's about 80 watts.
Yeah, I see you're right off of 65 there a little ways, I guess.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. In fact, if you were to look at a map or something, however you're doing it, M65 and King's Corner Road, I actually live about a half a mile north of King's Corner Road out here in the Bryant's Division.
I've been over that way before, you know, but it's just been so many years since I originally lived in Montrose over by Flint, and I worked 38 years there in General Motors, and once I moved up here in 2005 to Indian River, so I retired up here from GM, but I guess I had enough to keep me down. I went back to work when I got up here and worked another 10 more years, so I officially retired in 2000. So, been enjoying that, and I got plenty of time to play radio.
Oh, that's good to hear. I don't know what your temperature is up that way, but it's pretty cold down here in the Glenny area. I got 2.7 degrees.
The ham shack out in my barn, and I get out here from the house, and I usually get out here about 10 minutes to 6, and I get on a 18-net on 80 minutes. When I get my good morning round, I usually tell them what the weather is, and when I reported the weather to them, it was minus 1 here. And it's supposed to go up to 30 degrees, though, so it's got 32 degrees difference, you know. Hey, I'm looking forward to Sunday, 1st of March. Wow, things are going to get better.
Well, the mystery question is this the last hurrah for the cold weather? Are we going to start breaking away from that and warming up? I'm glad you caught the sarcasm.
I would love it. I'm ready for this. I'm always tired of winter in February. I start making plans to go on a vacation for a couple of weeks in February, but we just haven't been able to swing that. So.
Yeah. I guess March 8th, we got to change the time again, so days appear to be longer than what they really are, and yeah, all that kind of nonsense too.
Well, I tell you, I'm anxious for March to come around because we have elk here in our territory, and usually after about the first week of March, the elk start shedding their antlers, and I've got 3 adult bulls visiting my backyard every night, and I'm hoping that they drop them right here. I don't have to go look for them.
Yep, that's pretty neat. Whiskey 8 Golf Charlie Lima for the station ID. Yep. Well, it's been a long time since I've seen an elk. Last time I saw one was in Yosemite National Park, and that's been more than a coon's age ago.
Have you reached the double nickel yet? Are you 55 now?
Oh, that's not going to happen until July 24th.
July, okay. My oldest daughter was born on Halloween in 1971. So. I'll be 79 in September. But I'm still riding my Harley.
Hey, do it for as long as you can. Me personally, motorcycles terrify me. I won't get on one. Especially with the deer we have. Holy crap. I hit a deer July 5th of last year with my vehicle. And I'm lucky it didn't do more damage than it did. I was going 65 miles an hour, and that deer came right out in the middle of the road, and I slammed on the brakes, got it down to 55. Boom, hit that doggone thing. I don't think it survived, to be honest with you, but who knows. I went back to go look for my headlight parts and stuff, couldn't find them, couldn't find the deer. I don't know what happened.
I don't drive my mic at night no more. I can't drive it until the summer comes or spring, you know, it thaws out and gets rid of the snow and the salt. So, but back in 2013, I was from Lake City, headed over towards Houghton Lake on M55, and it was after 10:30. It was dark, and I was driving back home. And I was going 55 miles an hour. I hit a deer head-on with my Harley. Put the lights out. I didn't go down, luckily. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to you. the deer got disemboweled by one of the foot pegs. When I got the bike to stop, I sit there for a couple of minutes, idling, wondering what the heck happened, you know. And I shut the motor off, and I didn't have no lights in the front, so I had to have a wrecker come haul me up to the Harley shop in Gaylord, and then they dropped the bike off. And then I had the wrecker driver taxi me home to Indian River. He said, well, I can't put that on your insurance. He said, only that. I said, that's all right, I'll pay you. So I paid him $30 to give me a ride home. But, yeah, I didn't get hurt. But, if I was on my other bike, didn't have the guard on it, you know, that would have wiped me out. You know? But I sold that other bike. The other bike was a 98 Harley soft sale custom. Anyhow, that one didn't have an engine guard on it. So that's what protected me from the, getting the deep bike and knocking me off the bike. But the what I did is I sold that bike and I bought an HF Ample.
Yeah, I think that was a good choice. I think I would have done the same thing. But I'm glad that you're okay, and I'm glad that everything worked out for you. You know, I'm sorry that the damage happened to the bike that it did, but, you know, them deer, they get out there and they get stupid sometimes.
I'm a retired semi driver. The last 10 years I worked at GM, I was driving semi for them, hauling, and I hit a number of deer with them, and then working 10 more years up here for other companies, driving truck, and I mean, I've wiped out a lot of deer. I've even had big one out in front of me, close calls. They had to, you know, almost, you can't slam on the brakes on a semi, or a jackknife, you know. So I had to come to some pretty hard stops to, just to avoid animals. But, wow.
Yeah, what kind of upset me about hitting that deer is, you know, it happened at a time when I didn't have a whole lot of money to work with, you know, and I talked with a friend of mine and I says, hey, you know, I need headlight parts and stuff and I need to get my vehicle front end, you know, straightened out a little bit. And he says, well, come on over and we'll see what we can do. And so we got some of the metal, you know, straightened out. It wasn't too bad, which really surprises me because, you know, I would have expected the front bumper to be in worse condition than what it was, and I'm lucky it didn't take out the radiator. But it got the core for the air conditioner, so I'm going to have to get a new core for that and get that stuff replaced at some point. But he says, well, I got an idea. I said, what's that? He says, that tower that you just got, how about I get that from you, and then I'll get your headlight stuff for you and all this kind of stuff. And I said, yeah, that's fine. I said, if you want to get stuff out of the junkyard, you know, basically put on what used to be on there, that's fine too, you know, keep it original. He says, oh no, he says, I'm going to hook you up with a lot better than that. And he did too, and pretty happy with the outcome of that. WHCCL.
Familiar you are with the Upper Peninsula there, Greg, but when I was driving truck for Michigan Wood Carriers out of Vanderbilt, Michigan, and they were sending me up to Gwinn, Michigan, which is up in the Upper Peninsula, and a sawmill there. So I'd haul doubles, hauling logs up across the Mackinac Bridge, and went to the Potlatch sawmill there in Gwinn, and dropped off a log. They had to sweep the decks off, and they load me back with lumber. You know, 72,000 pounds, you know. Then coming back down 41 out of Gwinn there and going towards back to US 2. And I hit a deer one day. This is at night. And there was about six of them run across in front of me. I thought I was going to get more than one. I only got one, but it didn't damage the truck bed. And the next day, going to the same spot, the very next day, I hit another one. Oh, man. This suicidal deer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they get that way sometimes. Well, it's like, you know, last July when I hit that doe. You know, I saw her on my way going into town. I was going up to the party store so I can get another pack of smokes, you know, and I saw her, you know, on the other side of the highway in M65 there, and I slowed down, you know, and she ran down towards the field. I thought that was going to be, you know, the last I see her. Nope. On my way back home, pow, nailed her. There was nothing I could do. So, anyway, yeah, obviously that was all after dark and stuff, but I try to limit my driving now, too. You know, I don't like driving around after dark, you know, on account of that fact. Those doggone deer, they'll be right there on the side of the road, and next thing you know, they're hitting the road, and that one there, I don't know if she was looking for a fawn or what her deal was, but she acted like she wanted to die that night.
Yeah, it's, the deer, they don't care, they don't know, some are smart, they wait for the cars to go past before they, but they spook and they run around in front of you, you know. Well, if you got a map close by, if you look at, the map from I-75, you'll see M-68 up here by Indian River, Burt Lake and Mullet Lake, lakes up here. Well, I take, most of the time, one of my favorite routes for Charlie is I take M-68 out of Indian River, get over to Onaway, and then on M-33 down all the way to Mile. And when I get to Mile on M-72, head up to Grayling, and then I'll go up Old 27 all the way back to Indian River. That's 200 miles round trip. And I like that route. I'm going to take a little more exploring this summer and head down 65 and go down through there and come out in East Tawas off of 55 there. And I used to go to Tawas quite a bit. February, back in the 70s, I would go to Tawas, East Tawas, for the Pritchville Ice Carnival. They have that. It's usually the weekend after tip-up town in Houghton Lake. So, and back in the 70s when I was going there, man, they had 3 foot of ice out there on the Tawas Bay, and you could drive a semi out there.
Yeah, I was over in Tawas helping a friend of mine out that I know from the 11-meter band. He's got macular degeneration, and he's 73 years old, and his wife, she's got a speech impediment, and she's got cerebral palsy, so, yeah, they're both going through a bit of a hard time. She's 65. So I go over there to help them out, you know, as often as I can, too, and I noticed that there was quite a bit of ice over there in the Tawas Bay.
At that time of my station, I was working at Buick there in Flint, and I wasn't driving assembly yet. I was on an assembly line. So, but one of my pals at work, he talked me into going up to the Tawas there for the ice carnival, the ice finishing. And so, but I remember the guy sitting there in Tawas, he said, "Yeah, you can drive all the way to Queso." I said, "Where's that?" "That's in the thumb. You can drive all the way across Saginaw Bay to the." I wouldn't have tried it. But I did drive my pickup out on the ice, probably about 2 miles out from, and we still had to have somebody come bore a hole for us with a partner, because the ice was still 2.5-3 foot thick there.
Well, me personally, I don't have that kind of confidence to be taking a vehicle out on ice, let alone me walking on it, so. I've done it before. You know, my dad and I used to go ice fishing out in the Saginaw Bay back when I used to live down in Bay City, and we'd walked out there, I don't know, about a mile, mile and a half or so, and, you know, back then it was all right, but I'm just not that young and brave anymore.
Especially now with a vehicle. wasn't that long ago. See, I moved here in 2005 in Indian River, and probably around 2010 or something like that, somewhere. I got a friend over here in Sheboygan, and I went over there on a snowmobile to his house, and we went riding and stuff. We went across Black Lake, and I never rode a snowmobile across the lake before. I said, how fast you want to go across the lake, Tom? And he said, wide open, fast as you can go. Okay, I'll follow you. Here we go, going across from one side of the west side of Black Lake over to the east side, and there was a restaurant right there where we stopped. Anyhow, I had my snowmobile going 85, 90 miles an hour, and they were hitting these rupture cracks in the ice that would make it shift up a little bit. And the ice was thick enough, you know, it wasn't going to go through it. But when I hit those cracks, the imps left airborne. I did not like that. I was not comfortable with that at all. I told Tom, I said, I'm not driving back across the lake with you. I said, I'm going to go around it. He said, no, we're not going that way.
Yeah, that would change my mind pretty quick, too, WHCCL. Yep. Well, I'm not often out here on the 2-meter band, and I should be, you know, got the radio and everything hooked up, but I don't know. I got this other UC radio that I play with, it's DHF, right? I need to get my wire antenna back up. The ice storm that we had last April, did a number on my nylon cord. It was kind of dry rotted out anyway, but it finally got enough ice on the wire antenna there to where the quarter inch nylon cord finally broke and the antenna came down. So I need to get that back up. What I did is I made initially it was an 80 meter dipole, and then later on I made some homemade ladder line. Separated some number 12 insulated house wiring by about an inch and a half, and I bought a 4-to-1 ballon that can handle 3 kilowatts, supposedly, and turned it into a doublet antenna, and it worked a lot of bands for me, and, you know, at 100 watts, it got out pretty well.
Making antennas for a while. It's so much easier just to get them commercially made. I got a here for 80 meters, 75, 80 meters. And my first antenna I ever had, double bazooka that I built, you know, and that was working perfect when I moved up here. And I just never did put it back up. I just put up commercially made ones. I've had dipoles, double bazookas. I haven't never messed with a G5 RV, but my father-in-law did. He had one of those, and that worked great for him. So, but I've been thinking about trying making up a doublet, but I just haven't got around to doing it, you know.
Well, my property over here, I've got 1.7 or 1.75 acres on a corner lot, and it's wooded. Some of the trees are healthy enough to use for wire supports, but other ones I'm a little skeptical about, but, you know, just depends. Depends on the weather, mainly. I didn't have that doublet up very high. I think I had the feed point maybe 20 feet above the ground, and the ends of the wire came down about 10 or 15 feet above the ground. But yeah, I had more money than I anticipated into that project, I'm telling you. I had about $300 or $400 wrapped up into just a simple wire antenna. You know, I had to buy everything I needed, so, you know, and when you do that, you know, you start from scratch, then it's going to cost you a little bit. You know, but it's been a pretty good antenna. I'm pretty proud of it, but yeah, just need to get that back up and going again as soon as the weather gives me an opportunity to be able to work on it some more, you know, and get it back up.
calling you, Chief W. Rod here in Indian River. Well, I've got on the north east side of my barn, corner of the barn, I got a 40-foot Rhone tower with on top of that I got a A3 tri-bander, Kristaff. Then up above it I got 13 B2 2-meter beam, and but I'm using right now the Comet vertical. It's on top of my barn on a tripod, so it's about 40 feet up to the tip of that, and that's what I'm talking on right now. But I don't really need that. I can talk on this repeater that I'm using with a rubber duck with a HT. So it's close.
W8GCL, Glennie. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty nice when that works out that way. I used to live out in Arizona years ago. I left Michigan and went out there and spent 17 years out there and enjoyed every minute of it until a couple of heat strokes said enough it was enough with the heat. So, anywho, I used to get into all kinds of repeaters with just a few milliwatts from credit card size walkie-talkies or handy talkies or whatever you want to call them. Had a lot of fun with that. And then we had repeaters that were linked in with other repeaters elsewhere. And then Equilink came around, and not long after that, I think it was IRLP came around, then All-Star came around, and then USU came out with their digital voice radios, C4FM and stuff, and of course D-Star came around, you know. So I watched this amateur radio stuff, you know, get more and more sophisticated and get better and better.
Stuff. Monologue, or, you know, just 2-meter FM. This is a dual band, but my UHF side is not transmitting, so I gotta get somebody to look at that. I have a friend of mine over in Atlanta that's good at fixing radios. I'm going to take it over to him, see if he can get it going for me on the UHF side. But, hey, Greg, nice to chat with you there. Nice meeting you. I'm going to get off of here for now. I got some things I got to get going on. But, hey, there's a ham swap meet coming up in May at Cadillac. If you get a chance, Cadillac, I usually go to that one every year. And it's just before the one that comes up in Hamvention down there in Ohio.
Yeah, I might make it to the Cadillac one, even if I don't have a lot of money to spend. But yeah, going down to Ohio, that's not a realistic possibility for me. You know, so as much as I would like to get around and go to those places, you know, my money's limited, especially right now. I just put a bunch of money into my vehicle to keep her roadworthy, and it's a 2002 Chevy Blazer, and she's been a pretty good vehicle and been driving it around for 7 years, the rust bucket that it is, but the frame is still good, and you know, the motor and everything's still good in it yet, so I'm going to try to keep it on the road as long as I can because it's the only vehicle I have.
That's a good idea. Take care of it there. All right, Greg, nice chatting with you there. Thanks for the company. I'm going to get the rest of my day started here. So 73s, and maybe somebody else will jump in here and keep your company for a little bit there. Anyhow. W8-something. I know, I had it on a QRZ up there. Mine's WG8W. Yeah, 73's there, Greg. We'll see you another time.
Okay, Mr. Ron, fair enough. I enjoyed the conversation, and you take care out there, and I really hope to run into you again and again. Sure like talking to you. You take care. In 73 is from Whiskey 8 Golf Charlie Lima. Take care.
For you. That's cool. Have your initials there. That's all right. Okay. WAGCL. 73 is Greg. WG8W.
Just real quick, Ron, in case you're still listening, I liked it so well, I went to the Secretary of State and got my license plate done up with the amateur radio call. WAGCL. Yeah, let's see, who else is awake and alive this morning? W8GCL, Glennie, Michigan.
Good morning, this is KF8ENF in Harbor Springs.
Yeah, good morning to you as well, sir. You got W8GCL, Greg, Golf Romeo Echo Golf over here in Glennie.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. This is Bentley. I'm in Harbor Springs and getting into the system on the 19 in Petoskey. I missed the town that you're in. Say that again, please.
Yeah, located actually just 6.5 miles south of the town of Glennie. Golf, Lima, Echo, November, India, Echo.
Ah, copy that. So is it as cold there as it is here? We've got 7F this morning.
Oh, I'm showing 1.9 degrees over here where I live at. That's not using a phone or the internet or anything. That's right here on the property.
Okay, well, you win.
Yeah, we've had a pretty hard freezing the ground too. The frost line went quite a bit deeper. I'm going to say it's probably a good 24 inches, maybe a little deeper. But anyway, so far we're getting through everything all right, and I'm really looking forward to getting rid of the snow, see it go bye-bye, and get some warmer weather in here.
Yeah, you and me both. Really looking forward to that spring thaw. These warmer temps we've had on and off the last week or two have been welcome, and we've been getting a lot of sunshine up here, which has been great for my attitude.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, I'm like most other people. You know, I get tired of sitting inside all the time because it's too cold and cruddy outside, and over here it's always cloudy. You know, especially in the winter. You know, getting near as much sunlight as like you do in the spring, fall, and summer and all that. So, yep, we just kind of roll with it the best we can and, you know, just make the best of it. And, yeah, I got to get my HF wire antenna back up too. My nylon cord that I was using lasted a couple of years before it finally dry rotted. And that ice storm that we had back in last April put enough weight on the wire antenna to where it snapped that nylon rope. Didn't take much to snap it at that point.
Well, sounds like you got yourself a little project once the weather conditions improve. That's great.
Oh, I got a few of them. I got some oak trees that just died a couple of years ago and they haven't recovered. I need to get those taken down. Whoever wants them can have them, you know, cut them up and use them for firewood, whatever they want to do. But I need to get some oak trees down over here, and I got to get a tower put up. Thinking about 40 or 50-foot tower. That ought to be adequate for my needs. And thinking about trying a new type of HF wire antenna when I get that tower up.
So HF is one of the things that I've got on my list to dabble in at some point. What's the current status of the solar cycle, and I understand it operates in phases, and I'm not clear on where we're at in the current cycle. How good is HF right now?
I would say HF is doing pretty well for the most part, but when we get really intense solar flares, it can have a negative impact on the HF bands. It can make it go pretty quiet to where the propagation is pretty much gone, and then it'll recover, you know, within usually a few hours, sometimes a couple of days. And then you have the effects of the aurora borealis that can make everybody sound like they're warbly or underwater, like they might have a power supply issue. You know, the aurora does that. It's really weird. It'll even do that on the 6-meter band, too. But I think we peaked out with solar cycle 2025 in October, and we are on a gradual decline. So I'm going to say for the next 3 to 5 years, we should still have some pretty good propagation activity going on.
All right, that's good to know. Thank you. I've got a couple of buddies here locally that have a similar interest as me. And it's mostly the ability to have, you know, better simplex communications. After the ice storm last year, it really showed what the weakness is on all of our regular forms of communications, be it cellular, GMS, GMRS, even the 2-meter repeaters didn't last long up here before they lost power and went down. So just looking for extra capabilities in the event of another disaster-type incident, wherever it may be.
And W8GCL, how far away do the people that you normally talk to live in reference to where you live? I mean, are they fairly close to where you can get good ground wave activity, or is there a little distance between you guys, or what's going on there? What's the situation?
All within 20 miles of each other, but we've got a lot of topography in between, so you know, we can all reliably hit some of the repeaters around here. Simplex has been a real challenge. I've got one buddy that is close enough to me where certain conditions we can talk on the MERS frequencies on Simplex. That's been about the best that we've been able to attain. Just looking for some extra capability.
Well, being that the power restriction on the MERS frequencies is limited to 2 watts, you'd have to have one heck of a big beam up for that. But it's doable. It just depends on the hills and the foliage and how tall the trees are around the area there.
Yeah, we're all technician licensed guys, although my one friend is going to be studying for his general, and I'll probably do the same pretty soon. So I was hoping that maybe the 10-meter band would be something that would be useful to us for that sort of thing.
Well, Bentley, you were thinking right along the same lines I was thinking. If you're a technician class, you got 28.3 to 28.4 to operate in. That might be a very viable option for you. Typically, that's upper sideband mode up there in tenders. I don't think anybody would complain if you use lower sideband or AM or anything, but they might get a little gripey about it, but we're allowed pretty much all modes there anyway.
Yeah, I've looked at a couple of different radio options, a couple of different antenna options. The whole thing is pretty confusing as a noob, but I've been running the traps on it. I think I've got a fairly decent plan. I just don't know in, you know, practical application how well it's going to work. So, you know, that's the thing. It's, you put together a plan, you start going down the rabbit hole, and it gets pretty deep pretty fast.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I didn't learn it all overnight either. It took me, hanging around with the right people and long enough and often enough to be able to learn what I know. and there's a whole lot more out there that, you know, like DMR and stuff like that, that I'm not, you know, I've never had any pleasure of working with yet, but someday I'll get to that point. But, you know, I'm thinking, I don't know if what you have for radios over there that cover the 10-meter band, but, you know, those Anytone 6666 Pro radios, they're 10-meter radios. They can be converted to operate 10, 11, and 12. And they work really well with a half-wave fiberglass antenna, something like a Antron 99 or something like that, or any 5/8 wave. That might be a viable option for you guys on 10-meter, you know, and I do that here, and I can talk to guys, you know, up to 40 miles away with just the power of the radio.
Okay, yeah, that's something I'll check into. I was thinking of, you know, buy once, cry once, maybe get one of the Shack-in-a-Box radios. I'm an Icon guy. I like the 7100. That would, it's got two different antenna inputs on it, so I could run it on 2 meter and 70 centimeter with one antenna and have a feed out to probably like an inverted dipole or maybe an NFET or something like that. So that's what I was thinking maybe for my setup, but, you know, open to other suggestions, so thanks for that.
No problem. I got a neighbor that lives a few miles from me. We call each other neighbors, but he's got an NFED antenna, and he doesn't seem to be very happy with that. He paid a lot of money for that thing. And me personally, I made a wire antenna for the 80-meter band. It was originally a dipole there when I first started out with it. But then I made some homemade ladder line out of the same copper house wiring that I made the antenna from, and I use those electric fence insulators you can buy at Tractor Supply, cut them down to about an inch and a half long or an inch and a quarter long, made little separators to put between the wires so that I can maintain about an inch and a half spacing between the two wires. I made it the length that it needed to be and just some random length, I think it was 40, 50 feet or whatever, and ran it to a 4-to-1 ballon, and I can tune anything from basically 10 meters to 80 meters without.
Oh, that's a pretty cool way to make your own ladder line. Yeah, it's kind of a, I've heard that is the standard for you know, building an antenna, and I can't remember seeing ladder lines since I was a little kid with the rabbit ear antennas on our TV. Back in the 70s, and I understand they don't make it anymore. But yeah, that's a pretty neat way of building your own. That's pretty cool.
Well, it is a time-consuming process, and you basically have to rig up a jig, you know, across your yard, you know, so you can work a certain amount of length. You know, depending on how big your yard is, you might be able to do, you know, 20 feet at a time, or maybe make 50 feet at a time or 100 feet at a time. It just depends how much space you got to work with. Set up a temporary jig and stretch your wires right across there. I used those black zip ties to put right down in the center of the hollow part of those insulators and attach it to the wire. So zip ties going around the wire on one and going around the other wire, and it holds it right to that insulator. And Donnie, it worked out really good. The key thing is if you're going to use bare wire, stick with bare wire. If you're going to use insulated wire, stick with all insulated wire. Don't intermix the two, because that tends to throw things off. One of the awesome things about ladder line is that it doesn't care what the SWR is. It's going to put the power to the antenna, you know. And whatever the tuner has to work with, you know, obviously the tuner's going to send that back to the antenna too. So you have a lot of advantages there.
So is it recommended that you get a separate antenna tuner or a radio that actually has one built in? It sounds like that might be required if you're jumping around between the different bands, but if you're just going to stick with something like, say, 10 meters, you just build an antenna for that, measure the SWR, adjust it accordingly, and then you're good. You can do without an antenna tuner.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if you got a couple of wires that are about 8 feet long and the 10-meter band is the band of interest, then sure. Just beat it in the center and you're good to go. You can use coax cable if that's the only band you're going to operate on. There's nothing wrong with that. You can do a direct feed from coax cable. I'm a connector guy because I like the easy way it connects, but yeah, you can make like a PBCT and install a PL259 or a SO239 socket on one of the PVC caps there and have a way to screw a coax to it, and you can have your like stainless steel eyelets to attach the wire to and be able to feed it that way. You know, just make your connections on the inside of the PVC as you're putting it up, you know, the caps and stuff together, and once the glue sets and everything, you're going to be good to go. I've done that countless times. And anything will work for an insulator, you know, whether it's plastic, wood, what have you, you know, as long as you can stay dry enough.
Ah, okay, so that's interesting, because some of the designs I've seen, you know, for a simple antenna, whether it's hoisted on a tree or tacked onto the side of the house, they don't seem to be very weatherproof. And putting it all inside of some PVC tubing, that's a great idea.
Yeah, if you can get a hold of some 3/4 inch PVC tubing and caps, you can go a hole, like at the bottom part, you know, you put the T where it's down, and you can put like a SO239 connector there, and you can throw some silicone in there to waterproof it if you want, you know, on the inside there once you get the wire soldered to it. And then you'll have, like, your stainless steel eyelet deals, you know, like maybe quarter 20 thread, a couple of stainless steel flat washers so you can connect the wire terminal to that, you know, on the inside of the PVC insulator, of course, you know, and it keeps everything waterproof that way. Heck, as you're putting it together, you can fill the whole thing up with silicone and be all right. But it's not necessary to do that. It's going to take an awful long time for that silicone to cure if you did that. But you can get a good part of it, you know, taken care of, you know, so that water can't get inside of there and stuff. WHCCO.
KFA-ENF. Yeah, it also would make it rigid enough where you could, you know, essentially just prop it up against the side of the house and just, you know, erect it by hand without having to pull it up a tree or something like that, or hang it off the eaves of the roof. I do live in an HOA, but we have very few restrictions. I just don't want to draw any more attention to myself than I'd have to. So something like that might look, you know, pretty unobtrusive, tucked up under the eaves on a house with white siding.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Where I live at, I don't have HOA here, so I'm not under such restrictions, but I have lived where, you know, those did exist. If you use black insulated wire that's stranded, you know, stranded copper wire in the middle, but have that black insulation on there, it actually hides that wire pretty well when it's up in the air. It's pretty difficult to see it. Don't matter if it's day or night. It's going to be real hard to see it, unless it's in a wide open or something. But even still, it's pretty non-intrusive.
In the same thing. You know, it's almost impossible to see something like that to the casual observer. And, you know, maybe attaching a pulley to a tree outside the wall of the shack, be pretty easy to hoist something like that up in the air and have some down leads coming down. I'm not that worried about it. But again, the piece of that I hadn't solved yet was how to make all of those connections, you know, weatherproof. So I don't want to have to go out and have to hoist my antenna every single time, especially now that I've got 3 feet of snow on that side of the house right now.
If you make a PVCT type of center insulator, that'll keep it weatherproof, especially if you use a little silicone in there where the holes are drilled at, you know, as you're assembling things. And use 100% silicone. That stuff's really good stuff. It'll hold up to the sunlight with no problem. It holds up to all weather conditions with no problem. And, yeah, it's the 100% silicone's a little more expensive, but it's well worth every dollar. But yeah, just use good quality silicone on that. You know, you don't have to get crazy and use a whole bunch, you know, or anything like that. It's not necessary. It will seal. And then what I would do at the wire ends is I would make like a 4-inch long PVC insulator with a cap on each end. And or you could just drill holes in the ends of the PVC pipe for that matter. That'll be fine. Run your wire through that and use some black bear cord, you know, some, I don't know, anything from an eighth of an inch to 3/16 of an inch thick, be fine. You know, that there matches in with the antenna wire insulation, and then it'll hide everything pretty well. It'll do a good job for you, too. You know, if you get that in an inverted V configuration, like an upside-down V, it'll be omnidirectional, and then you'll have a lot of skyway propagation with that, too.
That's what some of my research had shown me, and, you know, to build my very first antenna, it seems like a pretty simple design and one that's pretty effective for my use case. So that's all good stuff. I do like the idea of, you know, having the PVC weatherproofing for the, you know, the area of the connections. Yeah, that would be pretty unnoticeable. So really good stuff, Greg. I really appreciate the info.
Well, you're very welcome. You know, I order a lot of stuff from Amazon. You'd be surprised what they carry on Amazon for those connectors and whatnot. You can get some good Teflon insulated PL259 connectors, Teflon insulated SL239 connectors, bulkhead connectors, whatever floats your boat. And just make sure you get the good ones and not something cheap. You know, but anyway, yeah, I built insulators like that, you know, for the center of the wire antennas and stuff like that. And I've been able to experiment with different wire lengths for different bands and stuff like that, too. So it's been pretty handy. You can drop that thing on cement and generally don't break. And seems to hold up to the weather. If you got a can of black spray paint, you can always spray paint that white PVC black. And PVC by itself, they say it don't hold up very well to the sunlight, but I lived in Arizona for 17 years, and I'm going to say PVC actually holds up quite well in the sunlight, especially with the sun out there beating on it all the time. So I can attest that it's pretty strong stuff. And it holds up to the ice and everything pretty well, too.
Yeah, I would think that if you're adding a coat of paint over that PVC, that'll help too on the UV damage. So, yeah, really great stuff. Thanks again. I appreciate you taking the time to talk me through some of those things. It's one of those mysteries that I'm finding more questions than answers on. You mentioned DMR earlier. I've been putting some time in on that and trying to figure that out, and made some progress recently and been enjoying that. That's kind of cool too. So, you know, and I have the next thing down the road for, you know, once I solve this this mystery, move on to the next one.
Well, the biggest suggestion I can offer you is don't get too aggravated and just, you know, have as much fun with that as you can. I had to drop my power down a little bit because my radio overheat thing came on and it caused my transmitter to stop. So I hope I'm running enough power to maintain the repeater.
Yeah, I heard your warning tone there. I was wondering what was going on, but you might be just a little bit quieter, but you're still coming in strong. No, no problems at all.
WHGCL. Yeah, I'm on a 2-meter analog radio. It's an old school one. I had it up on 80 watts, and right now I'm doing about 30.
Yeah, fortunately, where I am in Harbor Springs, I can get to the Petoskey Tower on low power, which for me is 5 watts. So I've got that set up as a crossband repeater, and I'm actually talking to you on my HT through my base station, which is kind of a nice setup.
Well, it's doing a really good job for you. It sounds good, and everything seems like it's working all right.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. I got started doing GMRS stuff with a couple of friends of mine locally here to expand our communications, and this was several years ago, and kind of put it to bed for a while because it wasn't that useful. And then the next time I cracked open the GMRS radios, I discovered that there were a whole bunch of GMRS repeaters in the area that popped up. So we've been working those pretty hard in the area. And I decided to get my technician's license last summer, cleared that in July, and I started playing with the 2-meter stuff. Haven't done a whole lot of 70-meter, but now that I'm getting into DMR, that seems to be the predominant frequencies for DMR access, so I'll be doing some more with that stuff.
Well, the antenna that I'm currently using here is made by a company called Tram. It's a 2-meter, 70-centimeter antenna. It's about, oh, I'm going to say about 8 foot long. It's a two-piece fiberglass. It's got a three-radio ground plane kit on it. Anyway, it's not very high off the ground over here. I've got some about 45 or 47 feet of Belden 9913 coax between the radio and that antenna. And I've got a good SWR on the antenna. And it's only about 9 feet off the ground from the ground to the where the ground plane elements are. So once I get that up higher, you know, I can start using lower power with the radio, you know. I got a couple of towers over here, and I got to get at least one of them up.
Yeah, for my base station, I've got an Edfong dual band that's in a 4-foot section of PVC pipe that I have up on the roof of my house, fed with some, I can't remember the type of coax, but I spent good money on it. It's one of the better coaxes you can buy, and that seems to be working great for me. I think my mobile antenna might be a Tram dual band. And just for a little quarter wave, that thing is working great. I can get into repeaters all over the area here. So, yeah, makes a difference when you have good quality components.
WHGCL. Yeah, I used to use like the Nagoya, what was it, NR770 dual band antenna on my vehicle, but I found out that the SWR was astronomically high on that antenna, so it was, in my opinion, just a cheap Chinese knockoff. Because the original Nagoyas, when they first came out, they were not like that at all. They actually worked pretty decent. I think it was like a half wave on 2 meters and 2 5/8 wave on 70 centimeters. And normally antennas like that do pretty well. there's really not a whole lot of 70-centimeter activity up north here. A lot of that's going to be downstate and stuff like that, or, you know, obviously in bigger cities. Again, depending on location. 2 meters, well, VHF in general, you know, because they're in the frequency range that they're in, you know, they tend to pass through the forestry and get around the hills a little bit better compared to the 70-centimeter band.
Yeah, I know that Nagoya antenna that you're referring to. I think I had that same antenna on my truck, and I think I got a decent FWR on 2 meters with it, but the 70-centimeter was just atrocious, or it was the other way around. Can't remember which. And I ran it for a while, and it just kind of succumbed to the elements and started falling apart where it was on the mag mount, and I just ended up just replacing it with the tram, and the tram seems to be great, and been really enjoying that. But yeah, I know what you mean about the 2 meter stuff up here. One of my buddies who just got his ham ticket last week, and he lives down in Boyne Falls, and he commutes back and forth to his business in Gaylord every day. And we used to talk to him on GMRS quite frequently. And last night he was on his way back. Coming into the 1-9 here, and he was just blown away at how much better his coverage was and the quality of the communication. So he's pretty excited about the whole thing, and it's just nice to have that extra capability.
Yes, sir. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm sure glad that there's more and more people getting their ham tickets and coming, you know, into the hobby. I mean, we need more people, and we need the younger generation coming out and stuff like that, you know, to keep things alive and going. You know, there's a lot of different facets of this hobby, you know, whether it be digital modes or digital voice or, you know, and it's more than just a hobby, too. You know, it's also a service, you know, because when you get into it, you know, you might want to help out with a parade or help out with some kind of community event, you know, with radio communications and helping to keep things organized, you know, when you have time. And I partook in a few things here and there on and off in my time. You know, I've been an operator now for, well, this year would be 26 years. So when I first got licensed, I was out in Arizona. I had a different call sign than this one, too. And when I moved here to Michigan, I decided to get a vanity call, and it was just about that time.
Well, I don't know how much we're considered younger generation. I'm getting pretty close to retirement here in the next few years, so I just picked up the hobby. And yeah, I hear what you're saying, though. I would hate to see all of this infrastructure that's so useful just go underappreciated and underutilized once some of the guys that have been, you know, guys and gals that have been working it for so many years start to fade out. I don't know what the solution to that is, but yeah, hopefully it's something that can keep going. I've been having a lot of fun with it and finding it very useful. So I appreciate all the work that everybody puts into it, and I've reached out to a couple of folks and volunteered to spend some of my time and sweat whenever they need something. So probably do some of that kind of stuff this summer in the area here, based on some of the projects I've heard that they've got going on. So looking forward to that. KF8ENF.
W8GCL. Well, a lot of it, too, is, you know, if you can get word around in high schools and stuff like that, you know, have, like, some kind of a kids-type thing on a weekend when the weather's good, you know, try to get them introduced to this stuff, you know, and that's pretty much where it's at, you know, and can start it on simple projects where, you know, they can feel some kind of reward out of it, you know, making simple J-pole antenna and things like that, and teach them how to solder and teach them what they need to know. One of the benefits about getting at least a general license is that oftentimes in the summer I'll hear, like, certain school events and stuff like that I like to participate in to help the kids out, you know, to keep their interest going in the hobby and the service. And try to inspire them to keep moving forward. And some of them kids can do Morse code like there's nobody's business, and there's other ones that are excellent voice operators, and, you know, how we keep the hobby going and keep it alive.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, as a parent whose daughter exited primary education some years ago, there's just a lot of pressure on those kids to do what everybody else does. I can remember that was the same way when I was that age, and boy, I don't think I would have been that interested in radio geek stuff, but kind of wish I had been. I think one of my buddies did say that he did run across a young man who I think was like 14 or 15 years old that had just gotten his technician's license, and he was on the air. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty inspiring, and I'd like to offer some encouragement to that young man if I ever run across him myself. Just, hey, buddy, keep at it, man, and have fun with it. So, yeah, good stuff. You know, try to get them off the screens these days and into something else. That's a tough nut to crack.
Yeah, WATCL. Yes, it is. You know, back in 1989, I think it was, when the Internet was released publicly, and you were able to send a simple text to a neighbor that, you know, was equipped the same as you, you know, down the street or halfway across the world, or the country, rather. I was there in the very beginnings of it all, and I was there in the beginnings of cellular technology and smartphones and smart this and smart that, and it makes it easier to get into radio stuff when you don't have that kind of access to the World Wide Web like they have now, you know, on account of the fact that, to me, in my personal opinion, I think that all that social media stuff and all that, it's a big waste of time. It's not very constructive. It's being used for the wrong reasons, and I mean, it's not all bad, but unfortunately, you know, that's just the way it's gone. And now with all this AI technology, they can manipulate videos and the way people, you know, they can make a video of somebody and you'll swear up and down it's them if you're not good at catching it, you know, kind of thing. So, I mean, it's pretty creepy now. And that just about killed off amateur radio here in the States. But fortunately, a lot of us old buzzards, you know, we saw what was coming and we try to keep the youngsters interested in what we got going on.
Yeah, I've spent 35 years at a corporate job, and I've seen how business has changed and evolved with the Internet and, you know, just communications. You know, I remember interoffice mail, and then, you know, the first pagers and the first cell phones and the regional cell phone plans and, you know, roaming and, you know, all the way up to today where you can, you know, get all of your business needs in the palm of your hand. It's pretty amazing, but it hasn't necessarily enhanced the business relationships. There's a whole lot of that old school, you know, face-to-face business stuff that I still like to do, and it's getting harder and harder to do that because everybody has the pressure on them to, you know, get an answer now, you know, get it electronically. We're losing a lot of the relationship part of business, unfortunately. And, you know, you mentioned AI. Yeah, that's coming in here at the tail end of my career, and I'm bucking that as much as possible. Let the young guys work on that and work themselves out of a job eventually. I'm not gonna contribute to that and scatter my knowledge to an anonymous computer bot. I'll be happy to offer a download to anybody personally that wants to benefit from my experience, but I'm not gonna train a machine to take everybody else's jobs after me. That stuff is pretty insidious. KF8, ENF.
WATCL, you're absolutely correct. you know, it won't be long before everything is completely autonomous, and, you know, where's people going to fit in? Where's the human aspect going to fit in with all this? That's what I'm concerned about. You hear about, not to get into the tinfoil hat too deep or anything, but, you know, you hear people like Bill Gates, you know, with those TED Talks and stuff like that, talking about, you know, viruses and how we need to depopulate the planet and get it under control and all this kind of stuff. You know, it really makes you think, you know, what's really going on behind the scenes sometimes, you know, and stuff like that, that concerns me a little bit, you know, where's humanity's place going to be at in the next 5 to 20 years, you know. What's going to happen to us old buzzards, you know, when we're at that age where we can't work anymore and be useful to the economy?
Well, one thing's apparent. I need to get myself a fresh batch of conspiracy theories because all the old ones have been coming true.
Well, it seems to me like you've been paying as much attention to everything as I have been then. Yep, so, yeah, I just hope that, you know, things don't get too bad. You know, I just hope that we can find a way to intermix everything and be able to get along with it, all right?
You know, for your own longevity is to just be as self-sufficient as possible. Make as much of your life analog as possible, you know. Embrace and utilize the digital stuff to your advantage, but have a backup plan. And again, going back to my, you know, interest in HF radio, you know, during the whole COVID shamdemic, it was pretty interesting to see how all of that can be exploited very, very easily. And having a backup plan that's a little bit more difficult to exploit. That started to become a bigger priority for me. So that's what I'm striving for these days, and this is a pretty good vehicle for doing that.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, yeah, I'm a fan of these two. You know, it's not, you know, my top favorite, but it's just what I've had, coincidentally, and I'm pretty happy with the brand. But the radio I'm talking to you on right now is a Fox Tango 2980. It's an old school analog only. And I'm pretty glad that I have this radio. I've got a dual band EQ that's a lot more complex than this one. And it's got C4 FM digital voice modes and stuff like that. I don't mind the digital voice mode so much, but when you start getting into things where a radio can connect to the internet, I can see some problems coming, you know, with that kind of stuff. You know, I like it. Pretty much anything is hackable, and it's just a matter of time. So you're right, you know, having good analog communications is really the way to go. Because when all else fails, and sooner or later it will, this is all we're going to have.
Well, if it gets too bad, we've always got coded messages that we can write down on a piece of paper and drop off on a schedule at a mutually agreed upon location. But let's hope it doesn't get to that. Well, hey, Glenn, Greg, it was good talking to you. I'm going to clear off the band here and let somebody else jump in if they want to use it, or maybe they're sufficiently entertained by our conversation this morning. So great talking to you. Appreciate the conversation. Appreciate the education. Hope to catch you another time. KF8 ENF.
All right, Mr. Bentley. It was a real pleasure to make your acquaintance on a repeater this morning. I need to get out here on this band more often. I've got another Yaesu HF radio, CFT990. That's an old school analog one, built in 1992, I believe. It's been a terrific radio, and the price was right. I couldn't turn down what I paid for it. So, anywho, yep. I'm also going back to analog stuff for the most part. So, you take care, and I hope to hear you out there again. Have a great day in 73s. Whiskey 8, call Charlie Lima.
And 8APX Mobile. G-Series PPS that I sent you? Yeah. Yeah, that's the ticket. So, said radio vendor doesn't know how to program pagers at all. What was that APRS coverage? Yeah. So I was saying, said radio vendor doesn't know how to program pagers at all. Yeah, that's affirmative. Yeah, I got three pages this morning, and each one hit perfectly. Nice. Yeah, I would definitely throw that into the powers that be, their faces there, and say, yeah, this is being done incredibly wrong, and this is why things haven't been working right for years. Yeah, I gotta go meet with Mark today, hopefully. Because he's compiling stuff to take to the TAC committee. Oh, fun. Yep. So, no, I was at work. I was, my pager was on the Petoskey Tower. I set up my paging per that paging box. And like clockwork, man, it hit beautifully every single time. The two pages and then the cancellation. You know, when you program things correctly, it's amazing how well they work. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Not a dummy about things, and things kind of work. And that's the other problem is I'm finding where there's no rhyme or reason to the sites that are in it. So if you have your pager set to only alert on your paging talk group and you go out of the area, it should start bonking at you that you're out of range. So you set yours up to do that? Yeah, my tone and vibrate for 16 page 62 is only got those, whatever it is, five or six towers in it that are in that paging box. All right, on. So, yeah, that means it should work pretty reliably. It turns out if you do the all-site hack, that doesn't go well. What I need to determine is if that was enabled by said communications organization, or if that was done by lone firefighter. That's the only thing I don't know yet. I believe that known firefighter also works for that company. That is correct, but I don't know if it's going to translate the same over to Emmett and Charlevoix counties. I see. But we'll find out. I'm going to get to the bottom of it. Because everyone I talk to, that's always the complaint. I don't even carry that page around me. It never works. Yeah, that's a problem. Because, I mean, here's another thing. Let's say we have another disastrous scenario like we did last year. There's no cell phones and all that. How are you supposed to page your personnel? You know, I'll have to ask how that went down, because I obviously wasn't on the department then, and I was literally living at the sheriff's department, so I don't know what was going on in the outside world, but I'll have to ask how we did that. I'd be willing to bet that for some people we had to go knock on their door. And that's really bad. That should not happen. But, you know, it's funny, is I don't think I've heard of any other county or, you know, anything like that, a general area having, any other county having pager issues like that. So, I've heard of counties that, or fire departments that don't carry pagers because they rather use their phones, but the pagers still work fine. And I kind of just associate them as being stupid, but, you know, that's my own opinion.
KCHVSU.
Good. Yeah, I got you in there, Toby. I get expressly told we don't carry it because it doesn't work. Well, now I know why. If supergroup detection is not enabled, then obviously it's going to miss. KCAVSU, go ahead, N8APX.
You guys, I'm going to tell you this much. The number of guys in our department that don't carry their pagers is ridiculous. I mean, to be honest, only a few of us carry our pagers, and half of them go through the app. Well, when that app goes down, they don't know how to tell, like, they reset it. And, oh, well, there's a call. Well, where's your pager? Well, it's sitting home in the charger. And I'll sit there and go, don't you hear calls? I mean, nobody, it's like some people in our department will not carry the pagers. We've actually gone through two different apps. One we did not like, so we went back to another one. The other one works much better because we were having trouble with the one that kept going down, down, down. Every time they paged us out, we wouldn't get an alert. And it was always down, so we went back to another one. But, yeah, no, I understand the feeling. You know, some of these pagers are nice. I like this communication one because I've got a scan feature and I can hear what's going on with things in my area, talk group-wise, that we use, and I'll tell you, it's amazing how many people think, oh, this will be the best thing, and then when that app goes down, oh, we got a call.
Yeah, there's a reason why pagers always work. When they're programmed, correct me, but it doesn't rely on cellular infrastructure. It doesn't rely on outside infrastructure. It relies on the same infrastructure that your radios work on. If your radios don't work, then your pagers aren't going to work. But it's simpler that way because if your radios work, you know your pager is going to work. If you're using the eDispatch or whatever the crap other phone apps there are that are just kind of BS. Yes, cool. That's fine. It's a backup, or if you miss the page on your pager and say you have a pager that doesn't, you know, record the audio, the pager is going to let you know that there was, in fact, a page. The app can tell you what the nature of that call is if you have a pager that doesn't record the audio. But I don't know of any departments that don't have pagers that don't record audio anymore, so I don't know. Everybody's kind of moved on because ever since the Minute or Six came out, it records audio, and you can listen to your upteen previous calls on it. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I've even found where some knob assignments didn't have recording enabled, so that's got to get fixed too. Yeah, I don't know.
All I know is that if you're not using super group detection and you have random, that's what they were doing, random site information in with spectrum scan enabled, which is okay because the pager will just go, hey, this is my closest neighbor, I'm going to go there. But if you're using it to depend on getting your pages and you go outside that paging box and you affiliate, or not affiliate, but if your pager ties to a tower that's not on or inside that paging box, you ain't going to hear squat. So it needs to be only those towers. That way when you go out of that box, it bonks and you go, hey, I'm not going to get my pages right now because I'm out of range.
And that's exactly, one time, I'll be honest, we were over at CSI in Grayling, and we got a page out. All of a sudden, my page is going off way over there, and I'm in this area. They've got us on roam on some of our pagers, and it makes it nice. I can go anywhere and mostly hear what's going on. You know, it's kind of funny that we're sitting there and all of a sudden in the building, my pager's going off. I'm like, what?
Well, the other thing is that if you only program in those sites, and you're closer to another site that's outside of that paging box, it's going to prefer the site that's in the paging box, or it won't even listen to the site that's outside of it. So I know that the paging box for Antrim County is quite large, and I'm not quite sure why. It doesn't really need to be. That's probably why you got your pages. And I know Kalkaska is the same way. And so is Wexford. Wexford is also, their paging box is also pretty large. So that's probably why. If you're about a county, I think usually if you're like a county over, you'll get the page. Or if you're, or maybe even a county and a half, you'll get it. Assuming it's programmed right, not doing full spectrum scan, and not just clinging to the closest site that it's near, because that's where you get your problems. Go ahead, Adam. Any DMH?
Yeah, that's quite a large paging box. That doesn't make any sense to me, but I guess. Mackinac County is the same way. Their paging box is massive. I mean, down in Gaylord, I'm hearing, you know, like St. Ignace Fire pages. That's wild. But, yeah, you're spot on with if you have a, If you're on the fringe of that box and you are nearest to a tower that does not have that paging group on it and it's in your pager, it's going to want to naturally go to that site, and then you're going to miss your pages. You're going to think you're okay because the pager's saying you got 5 bars, but if you're not in that paging box, you're not going to get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been different, you know, with these pagers compared to the miniatures. You know, some of my guys, they go scrolling through. It's kind of like with some of these 800 radios. Some of our guys can't remember what group to go on to go to Kalkaska County, or like Grand Traverse or whatever. And you know, being a radio trainer for the department, I have to re-show these guys every now and then, hey guys, let's figure this out here, what'd you do wrong? And one guy, he put on the wrong zone. He couldn't get a hold of a count of a dispatch in Kalkaska. Oh, I thought it was zone C, and my chief told him, no, read what's on the dash.
Well, my take on 800 radios and radios in general, you can have, especially towards the latter part of the VHF days, the newer radios. Specifically with Motorola's, like the XPRs, when they were still using those for VHF, specifically up this way, they had zones in them, and they used the zone feature. You had law, fire, EMS all in separate zones, or different counties all in separate zones. And, you had to figure out the zone navigation. And I feel like that definitely helped a lot of people navigate or, you know, migrate over to 800. And that's a good thing. But at the end of the day, changing the zone, not hard. You press the zone button on the radio. You choose the zone you want to be in. You press OK. You turn the channel off to whatever channel in that zone you need to be on, usually labeled with an alpha tag. It tells you the zone and the channel name and or alpha tag all on the screen all at once, so you know where you've got to, you know where you are, and if you have a sheet that tells you where you got to be, then you know what you got to do. It's really not rocket science. The issue is that the people that struggle with it need to practice it more often, but if they just leave it on one talk group all the time and expect it to just work, you're in the wrong profession. That's all I'm going to say. But anyway, I'm pulled into my job site here, so I'm going to go inside and get busy. Adam, go ahead. Any damage?
Yeah, all right. Well, I mean, there's some caveats to that. I mean, in our area, we did not change zones until we went 800. You turned the radio on, it was on 154.310, and that was it. There was no changing, nothing. And to be fair, we're now handing our firefighters basically computers and telling them to figure it out with a short amount of training that's not very good. And on the same flip side, when you are running code to a mutual aid and you're trying to work out what you're going to do, what's your assignment going to be, are you stretching a line, does somebody still need to do a size up, and all those things are going through your head, and then you're also trying to figure out how to navigate to a different zone and a different channel, it needs to be drilled, and not until you get it right, but until you get it wrong, or you can't get it wrong. So there's a lot to be said there, but all right, we'll let you get going, and Toby, I'll let you put the wraps on it. NADPX.
And it's like for us, we have zombies for Anthem County, for all the fire at fire ground, 5, 1, and 2. I mean, we've got those on one zone, and we have different counties on the other. We have statewide on another zone. You know, it's just, you've got to know where you're going. Like, we're going outside the county, like over to Rapid City. We have to switch over. And we put a note on the dash. Here's what zone you need to go to. But I understand it's hard, especially when you've got one person in the truck. Been there, done that. You know, it's like some of our new people don't understand everything. And we have two systems. We're still on analog. We still have our analog radios in the truck. We just have 800 for 800 stuff. We kept the one because, one, we have Coast Guard in it. We have the additional, you know, some other talk groups like VTAC. We still use the VTAC sometimes a little more. So there you go. Okay, Adam, have a good one. Drake, have a good one. I got to get going, too. I've got meetings going here shortly. Talk to you guys later. KCA-BSU 73.
N8MJO Mobile. AB9NN testing.
Good IFA ENF on VMR. KFA ENF mobile on DMR.
With a signal for a change, must be somewhat local.
I missed half of that. My APRS is covering you up.
It just said you had a signal for a change. Good morning, W8RPM.
Yeah, I finally got a radio back in the workroom, so I'm around again.
I didn't know you were lacking one. I need to permanent up my install. Get rid of this magnet mount, drill a couple of holes, but just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, that's all I'm running is a mag mount, but I'm in the work truck, so I'm not going to pop any holes.
Well, you'd sort of think that they would have something in there anyway, just to use as a test fixture, nothing else. But now I made the upgrade a while ago from an older to a newer, a little bigger engine, lower miles. I just moved my STM-400 from one to the other, but it needs a better B-plus supply and a real antenna. So, anyway, just saying hi. Running errands around town, be in and out most of the afternoon. See ya. W8RPM.
All right, sounds good. I'm roaming around Charlevoix right now. Catch you later, N8APX.
KFA ENF, mobile on DMR. KFA ENF, mobile on DMR.
Go back to analog.
Good. I don't know if you got enough signal, though. Happy Tuesday. Out running around, trying to get stuff done, get caught up. Already made a couple stops. Going to do a couple favors a little to the north and head back home. How was your day? W8R. PM mobile.
Yeah, a little low in the action here at work this week, so took off for a little drive to test my plug in my PM to see if it can actually
connect. Yeah, your signal kind of sucks. I'm surprised that the DMR was stronger, but again, I'm not really sure how you're configured. But I've got a buddy, an elderly gentleman that just got a new phone, and even though we've got all the data transferred over, he's still having issues with his new phone, so going to see if I can't help him out with that.
Yeah, I'm on Pleasant View, just coming up to Putnamville Road, so it's a little hilly and a little bit shaky around here.
Are you on the 7-4?
No, I'm on the 1-9.
You should try the 1-1. Phone's ringing back in a minute.
KF8ENF to N8DMH, break you out there. KF8ENF.
And it's on RLD listings. If you saw an OLD listing.
K8BMF from W8RPM. Hello.
Station calling. You weren't quite making it. I didn't catch much of that.
Thank you very much. KB7OLD.
Catch a little better that time.
KB7OLD monitoring. KB7OLD, can I get a signal report, please?
Station calling, you've got a good strong signal there.
How you doing today?
This is W8PET with D8 Victor Echo Tango.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Not a problem. Sounds like the tail of your signal has a little bit of squelch crash. Is a little bit different, or maybe a little sound in there. I don't know if you've got a, you've got your own maybe courtesy tone in there or something, but I heard a little extra something. It could be on my end. It could be interference.
Yeah, I just put in this, BGC 7600. So far, I've been really pleased with it.
Okay, yeah, good deal. It's doing a good job. I'm in RF into the Mio 700, and I'm copying you. It sounds like you're on a different one. Which one are you on?
I'm on the Petoskey I believe it's the 1900.
Yeah, sounds good. I appreciate it. You guys have a good day there. Stay safe, and looks like we got a little snow moving in tonight.
Yeah, we're not through winter yet. You're sounding real good. 73KB7OLD.
Yep, have a good day. 73's to you. W8VET.
KE8FJW Mountain.
KB7OLD Mountain, please.
And I pull in and I'm like, I don't believe this. My driveway's starting to drift. So I had to go and get out the blower and say, hey, Snow, you're moving back on this side of the pile.
Yeah, you'll have that. Well, we'll see how long it stays. There really is no way of telling. It's been getting so warm and then getting super cold, so we always think that's, you know, 1 second, you think spring's going to be here, and then it's just, nope. Here, have some more snow.
Oh, yeah, I know. Just be glad we're not out east, okay? I saw the people in Plymouth, Massachusetts, storm chasers. They got stuck.
Oh, really? Oh, it helps if you're prepared to drive in the weather.
Yeah, but they didn't have the proper vehicle. Let's put it this way. Ford Explorers, the little ones.
Oh, the Ford Escape?
Well, kind of like that. The Ford Interceptor, they buy those ones off Chicago Motors.
So they're getting the Ford. Okay, they're getting the police interceptors. They probably didn't put new tires on them or snow tires on them, and they drove them in the snow anyway.
Mm-hmm, basically. And one guy says he wish he would have had his Tahoe instead. trying to watch him go up hills was fun. It was funny. Yeah. Well, let's see. What's new here? Not much. Just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Gonna have me a T-bone steak for dinner and baked potato. So I'm gonna have a good little meal tonight.
Oh, there you go. I've got leftover Jersey Mike's and then, because I didn't have a lunch today, so that'll be my late lunch. If I get hungry again after that, I'll throw a pizza in the oven or something like that.
Gotcha. Well, I took the APRS for a little ride today. I went from home to station, from station to the store back home, back to the station, back home, and sitting in the car running.
Yep, I still see your icon showing up there.
Yeah, I know. But hey, at least it's working better than being in Japan or China.
Yeah, I probably still have the default. I think I have the default coordinates in it or something like that.
Well, I think what it was, it didn't have GMSG APRS roaming going on, where it wouldn't roam. So that was stuck off, so I said, well, let me put it over here. Next thing I know, it's working. Just one little goof up. That's okay, though. That's okay. But no, it's been sitting in the truck for a while, so it'll probably die, and I'll have to bring it in, recharge it, but that's okay.
So you were working on running it all the way dead anyway, so I guess that worked.
Right. There's been a lot of people here on the North Michigan Link system. It's starting to get used a lot more.
Well, we've got more machines now than we used to, and there seems like there's new people getting their license and jumping on, so that's always a good thing.
I know. Well, I'll tell you, I like sitting over here and being able to talk to somebody in Northern Michigan downstate all the time. It works out nice. It works out nice. Back when we used to have the 2 repeater link system, it worked nice too. We had the 3.8 and 7.4 combined. Man, that thing was nice to talk on too. And when the Spartan group decided to do something different, we made it hard on us, so it's actually nice to hear something happening again.
Yep. Well, and now that that same frequency is back, linked in and all that stuff, and it's actually at the same tower it used to be, so it's got that machine's got the, well, it will once we replace the antenna because half of it's missing.
I know. Oh, I hate those. Well, don't feel too bad, antenna. Somebody else is missing a box of elements on his antenna. Oh, get that done, yeah. Well, otherwise, not much going on here. Brown goes down to 29.20. It's 31 degrees. Didn't think it was going to get that warm today. But that's okay. So, yeah. Well, don't forget, you got to share with the cat your dinner a little bit. Maybe give him a couple pieces of meat.
I did that once, and it did not have a good outcome.
Which end? Rear end or front end?
It was both. It was not pleasant, and I'm not doing that again. He can stick to his canned food.
Okay, I get you there, yeah. I had to change microphones on this radio because the other one kept clipping. So there we go. Okay, well, hey, Drake, you mobile safe, and we'll talk to you later. And ATMH, CCVSU, 73.
See you, Toby, and ATMH mobile.
KF8ENF to N8DMH. You still out there, Drake?
Yeah, what's going on, Bentley?
New-ish repeater you have in Lebring, I think you said that you've got two of them there. One is analog and the other is DMR, but it's connected to the MI5 network. Is that a fair assessment?
Correct.
Okay, thanks. I couldn't remember what you had told me there, and if there was another DMR tower there that was not tied into the MI5 network.
No, it's just the two there, and I got a work phone call coming in. Thank you, Mike.
KF80NF.
Okay, do I? Hello. Anybody got a grip?
KCAVSU, hello, N8ATX. Is it snowing up there? Oh, is it ever? It's a whiteout.
nasty. I'm southbound M27, just leaving Sheboygan, headed for Indian River, and I cannot keep my windshield clean. It is coming down so hard.
It's snowing here. It's not bad yet. Let me see. Just a light layer on my truck, so there we go. 28 degrees primed or 29, 26.
It's probably about the same here. It's snowing a pretty good clip here, though. I got home from work at 4 o'clock, and by the time I went to go hop in my van, head on out, I don't know, 20 minutes ago, I had to scrape the windshield off because there was already a decent amount on it.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys might get 4 to 7 inches. We may get 1 to 3.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I'm over it.
No, I'm over it. I'm over it. I came home. I had to go on the station to meet with somebody, and then while I was there, we got call, which did turn out to be nothing, just went for a qualified ride, came home, or got back to the station, met with this gentleman's leadership, the teacher there, so he could set it up, and then I went to the store, came home, and I pulled in my driveway, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me, I got to go cut back my one bank. It was snow almost across the middle of the driveway. I'm like, no, this is going to stop right now.
Yeah, I've had it. I have completely had it. Between the cold and the snow, I am at my wit's end. I don't want to snowblow anymore. I don't want to shovel anymore. I don't want to clean my windshield off anymore. I want it to be 70 degrees and sunshine and none of this stuff anymore.
Amen. That's what I'm going to say right there. Yeah, I know. My blower's right for a break. It's starting to have some issues. I'm making it through, but it's tired. It's right for a little bit of a rest and then going to the repair shop for its oil change and checked out and all that, but yeah, no, this is ridiculous. But hey, it's like North Michigan winters again.
Well, you know, I was chuckling at the historic blizzard of 26 that they were getting out in New York. I was watching some videos of, you know, like the Weather Channel send them guys out there and make it look like it's really bad. I'm like, that looks like a Tuesday afternoon in northern Michigan. I don't know what they're complaining about. But, yeah, I've about had it. Thankfully, my snowblower was brand new this year. I went out and bought a brand new one because my old one died. So it's been chugging along, no problems, but I'm just sick of doing it.
Oh, I know. I have a 300-foot driveway, plus I got to do my deck around my truck, turnaround, plus I got to do my neighbor's driveway, and I have to go out back and make a path for the dogs, and yeah, it's starting to get tiresome. It's getting tiresome on me. I just, you know, every time I pull it out, I'm like, one more time, yeah. Well, I was watching some storm chasers out there, and I know a friend called a friend out there, and they got about 30 inches of snow. But the hard part was is the wind.
Yeah, they can have it. I'm glad we haven't gotten winds like they were talking about. But they can keep it. I don't know. Whatever I was watching, it was something on the Weather Channel, and we were at the gym. I was on the treadmill just kind of staring at it. And the guy was at, like, LaGuardia Airport or something like that. And, oh, horrendous snowstorm, blah, blah, blah. And it was just, like, some flurries in the background. Like, it was not what they were making it out to be.
Oh, I know. If he'd have been out in Massachusetts there, he would have found it, because Brandon Kopic was out there, him and Jane Bethlehem. And they were out in that stuff, and I mean, you couldn't even see, but the cable lines, the power lines were just swaying. And I'm like, oh, good golly. But then later on, yeah. You know, it just, they just went to an easy area where these two went out there. But, yeah, I know. It's like anything. It's like, I'll watch it, but I don't want to have to go sit on a power line myself. I got to do that Friday night. We got called for a tree on a line, and I got there, had to give good old Great Lakes a call and said, you better come on out here. Tree's broke, it's sitting right on the line, and it was like, oh, the fun I get to have all by myself.
Yeah, sitting on down lines can be tedious. Hurry up and wait. We had a guy on Sunday that up here at Little Caesars, there's a little sidewalk that runs between the restaurant and the main road there. And some guy in a pickup truck decided he thought that sidewalk was an alleyway. So he drove his truck through there and smashed into the building and then smashed into the gas meter. So we were sitting there waiting on DTE to show up for what felt like an eternity.
Oh, I know. It's like with us, we do pretty good. Our power, I mean, between Great Lakes and consumers, they're pretty quick to us. And it's like the other day we had a down line on our one-way get in and out area, and I mean, me and my deputy chief go and handle that, and, you know, we called them, and within 20 to 30 minutes, we get a consumer's guy. I'm like, this is cool, we have to sit here all day.
Yeah, no, it seems like they prioritize. When we had a pretty big sticker fire here a couple weeks ago, and both consumers for power and DTE for gas were there to shut things off within, 20 minutes or so. That guy had the breaker pulled for that section of line, and he actually climbed the pole and disconnected the wire. I mean, he was quick. We had power off to that building, like, as fast as you could blink, almost.
Oh, true. We do pretty good with consumers and Great Lakes down here. You know, it's like I'm sitting here Friday night and the pager goes off for a tree on our line, and I'm looking at the app, I'm going, not available. And it's like, oh boy, I'm by myself. But that was something I could just sit there and wait for him. My chief was home taking care of his kids and trying to get dinner done, and he said, if you can handle it, if you can hold off, I'll finish dinner and I'll come down. And he called me halfway down, and I was on the phone a few minutes later. Here comes Great Lakes Energy. I call him on the rail and say, go to the station. I'm going to be leaving here shortly. So that's one of those easy jobs I like.
Yeah, for sure. It's not too bad when don't take all day. There was one the other day that I was at work, so I couldn't respond to it, and it was just a line down anyway, so it's not like I was needed, but I think my assistant chief sat on that line for like 6 hours waiting for somebody. I don't know why it took so long, but it did. That was a big line, too, though. Garbage truck came through and took down a main, whatever it was, main distribution line or whatever. I don't know if he had his dump trailer up, but he hooked it, and it was not pretty. But, yeah, not too bad. Well, Toby, I'm about a mile out from my destination here, so I'm going to pull in here and move on to the next thing. So we'll let you go for now and catch you later on. KCAVSU, N8APX, 73.
Okay, 73, KCAVSU.
KFADNF.
KF8ENF, Alpha Charlie 8 Delta Golf, Jim over here on the link system.
Hey, good evening, Jim.
Good evening. Hey, I was copying the mail listening to conversations you were having about HF antennas, and whoever you were talking to sounded really, really knowledgeable, but I didn't copy his call sign. That was this morning. Do you remember his call sign?
I do not, unfortunately. His name was Greg, and I think he was calling in from Glennie.
Okay, I'll listen for Greg. Yeah, he mentioned his city a couple times. I don't quite know where that is, so... Okay, well, he sounds very knowledgeable, and the information he was giving you sounded, you know, top-notch, so I was just kind of curious.
Yeah, a lot of what he was suggesting was out of my knowledge zone, so I was trying to keep up with him, but one of the nice things that I got out of the conversation was some of the research I've done already was confirmed that I was on the right track, so... at least started down the road anyway.
All right, sir. Well, hey, I'll listen for you or him in the future. Alpha Charlie 8 Delta Golf. Putting the radio on scan mode, just watching TV here.
Yeah, have a great evening, Jim. Nice talking to you. This is KF8ENF from Harbor Springs.
KF8 FTE, mobile and monitoring.